takes a couple of dribbles and now hands the ball back to Carl Lane, and this one is official. The Raptors win their 51st game of the season.
The first selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to the New York Rangers.
Really good news. Rangers, an unreal team with really good players and, you know, a really nice city, so for sure it's really good news, and I'm really happy.
I mean, half the pundits in this city think they really know about the game, but they really don't. Some of the things that he is criticized for is beyond belief to me, and it just shows that people have no clue what's going on in this game.
All right, well, we knew there was a 7 out of 8 chance that the Maple Leafs wouldn't get the top overall draft pick and would not have Alexis Lafreniere available to them. So, I mean, did we get over that pretty quickly? Do we feel that it's fair that the New York Rangers won? There was all this talk about how if the Maple Leafs or the Edmonton Oilers or the Pittsburgh Penguins somehow walked away, the winners of the draft lottery, that there'd be yelling and screaming from the hills that the fix was in. Well, the New York Rangers play and are arguably in the biggest market in the National Hockey League. What happened was good yesterday. What happened was what needed to happen. A team that would not have made the playoffs ends up winning the draft lottery and now goes and gets the top player available. The New York Rangers would not have made the playoffs if the COVID-19 pandemic had not happened, and they come away the winner. And there's all this talk about weighted balls and cold balls, all this talk about balls. My favorite part of it, though, my favorite part of the whole thing, Mr. Commissioner, can you confirm that this is the logo of the Toronto Maple Leafs? Mr. Commissioner, can you confirm that this is the logo of the Minnesota Wild? I mean, they are really going out on a limb to prove that this thing ain't fixed. And I've never believed it was fixed. You don't honestly believe that these draft lotteries are fixed in any way, do you? In the NHL, how would the Edmonton Oilers have won as often as they did if this thing was fixed? Do you think that the NHL needs the Edmonton Oilers, needs that market? Yes, it's a Canadian market. No, I'm not crapping on the Northern Prairie folk. But do you think the National Hockey League needs Edmonton, of all places, to drive its bus? Of course not. So the New York Rangers come away. By the way, Ziggy is alive and well. He and I were FaceTiming and chatting and texting before the show, and we are just putting the work in right now to ensure that he is connected and about to join us. So Ziggy is here. What we should do, we should get Ziggy on the phone. We should actually do a literal phone interview. Have Ziggy tell us about his life. Share with us about Doris. Maybe Doris has cut his Wi-Fi. I think his crazy neighbor Doris, who gives him all this trouble, he's convinced that she cut his air conditioning lines a couple of years ago, convinced that she meddled with his security lights around his garage and out front of his house, convinced that she's messed with the fence that divides their properties. Maybe Doris is behind the sudden loss of Michael Zigomanis bright and early in the morning. I have absolutely no idea what, if anything, to take away from the Raptors' win over Milwaukee last night. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday morning on the show. We didn't know that Kyle and Freddie and Serge would be in street clothes. we assumed that there would be a limit on their minutes if they did play. Giannis, of course, didn't play for Milwaukee. But other than the fact that the so-called grunts, the Chris Bouchers of the world, the Matt Thomases of the world, other than the fact that they got minutes and they performed really, really nicely, I don't think that there's any conclusions you can draw. And what we know now is that the Raptors will take on the Brooklyn Nets in the first round of the playoffs. Masai's down there in the bubble. Can we get a bleep Brooklyn? Can we get a bleep Brooklyn? No Kyrie, no KD, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, long in the memory banks, long gone, long gone. And the Raptors should roll in that series. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. But a win over the Milwaukee Bucks last night, hey, you'd rather win a game than lose a game. And you'd like to see some of your bench guys play considerable minutes in a non-pressure situation and step up. And once again, the Raptors just move the ball around. Now, this ain't the first time in the bubble that they've had half a dozen guys get into double digits. Chris Boucher setting a personal best. What'd he have last night? 25 points to lead the team. Double-double, 11 boards as well. Mr. Burrell, jumping in.
Well, that's what I'm here for, really. To act as a safety net.
Are you? Are you going to catch me if I fall?
I'm always here for you.
It's been a long time since I've done like a 20-minute rant on the radio. That's the thing.
Too damn long, if you ask me.
Yeah, been a really long time since I've just let loose. I'm trying to shout down the conspiracy theorists about the NHL draft lottery, and I'm trying to come up with something that I can take away from last night's Raptors win, other than, hey, you'd rather win a basketball game than lose a basketball game. Doesn't matter who or who That's isn't
right.
playing.
That's right. More after this.
Yeah, more.
There's no conspiracy
there never
in
was.
The NHL draft.
How could there ever have been a conspiracy that the Edmonton Oilers succeeded exactly. in as often as they did?
Exactly.
And then managed on so many occasions to absolutely butcher it.
Our producer, Mike Gentile, tweeted out last night. He compared it to the New York Knicks. Remember the frozen envelope? The frozen envelope.
The frozen envelope.
Had the Knicks logo. And so when they drew it out, they knew exactly what envelope they were picking, and it turned out to be Patrick Ewing, obviously. So there's the fix wasn't in last night. But that being said, and you touched on it, this is fantastic for the NHL. The league's biggest market, its most vibrant city to get the shining star of junior hockey, it worked out perfectly for the league.
Right, well, and Kako was their second overall pick last year, and he had an up and down rookie season, but he's an 18-year-old kid, and now Alexis Lafreniere steps in, and
Panarin and Zibanejad.
Yeah. Guys, come on, it's
oh
fixed.
Oh my God!
Come
back.
On, guys, did you not watch that?
It wasn't fixed.
The ball heavier.
Oh, sorry, sorry. I thought when you said it's fixed, you meant your headset.
Yeah, that too.
I did. What do you mean?
I don't want to know what anything else may be fixed or not.
If anything, the ping pong ball would have been lighter. All the other ones would have been really heavy, so they wouldn't get sucked up in the thing.
It's heavier. You watch them put the balls in when they're showing the logo. You have a heavier ball, so when the machine sucks the ping pong ball up, it takes the heaviest one. Look at the Maple Leafs ball. It was in there. Did you not see it rattle?
How could it take the heaviest
right out.
One?
Well, hold on a second. I'm surprised you haven't taken it a step further. The guy dropped. I think the Rangers ball was the fifth ball. The guy dropped.
He dropped. It's heavier.
He dropped the fifth ball into the chute before Mr. Commissioner. I'm not calling him Gary, by the way. Because he was Mr. Commissioner. Mr. Commissioner could confirm that it was the Nye Rangers logo. And then he had to pull it back up, kind of sheepishly. Mr. Commissioner, can you confirm that's the New York Rangers logo? I can confirm.
To me, that was the strangest part of that whole thing, that you have to confirm that this is indeed the logo of the Toronto
Maple
Leafs.
We really want to show you it's not fixed. Mm. Well, of course it's not fixed.
I was talking to a couple buddies yesterday, and we were discussing, well, what happens if it's the Leafs, the Oilers, the Penguins? And I said, there is zero chance that any of those balls are going to come up when they do draw them. Like, it's not happening.
Okay, Ziggy, but you've got less than a 50% chance of being wrong even when you say that.
Yeah.
Right? Because what is there? What's 12 and a half times three? Help the terrible math guy. 37.5%.
I was giving guys yesterday 100-1 odds, and no one took it. No one took it.
Well, that's because that's playing. You know, Hugh said yesterday, think of a number between 1 and 8. And I said 6. He said wrong. I'm thinking 4. Well, because that it's also like if you got eight holes in the chamber and you got one bullet in there, you're playing Russian roulette, right? I mean, you're 7 out of 8 times. It stands to reason. Well, you're not going to blow your brains out.
It's going to work for
it's
the
NHL. It's a dark analogy, but yeah, that works.
Yeah. Well, it's going to work for the NHL. You've got the biggest, one of the biggest markets.
The biggest, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Ziggy, there are tinfoil hats like you out there. Trevor in Orangeville, was the ping pong ball the guy dropped by accident, not the Rangers ball? The answer to that question is yes.
It was.
And then John and Angus says, interesting that the only ball Buddy fumbled and dropped ended up being the one that came up the chute.
The only thing I will say is...
Oh, my God. You people.
Only thing I will say is, did you see the look on his face when he dropped it before he had a chance to show the
logo?
Saw
a ghost.
I kind of felt bad for him a little. His expression... Okay, maybe he did just drop it. He put a little too much butter on his toast in the morning, but you want to know what? It's created a lot of controversy last night.
Yeah, a bit of an E6 there, eh? The shortstop bobbled one at a crucial time.
Yeah, right through the wicket. Well, so, I don't know. I always think that if you're a professional sports team, I mean, you can't have him going to Edmonton, Toronto, or Pittsburgh.
Why not, Ziggy?
It's just, it would be so unfair.
Why did Connor McDavid end up in Edmonton? Wasn't that like the 18th first overall pick that they'd had in the previous 19 years? God, it felt like it.
Yeah, but now they got McDavid and Draisaitl, and it's different. Leafs have Matthews, Marner, Nylander. I'm
okay,
not sure Tavares in there because he's not.
But the Oilers had Hall and Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah,
Baby. Like
they're not the big two. So, but how many people were complaining yesterday that the Rangers got it and that the Red Wings didn't get it?
Well, yeah, but we knew the Red Wings weren't going to get it once the first phase of the thing played out.
I understand that, but people were still up. We're not happy about the fact that it went to the Rangers and not a team like the Red Wings. But then you also have, you know, you also have a lot of people saying, well, you want to know what? If you tank, you shouldn't get the first pick. You should put it to a team that is trying to make the playoffs, right? Give more incentive to teams that are pushing for that 8th spot. And the Rangers were. The Rangers didn't tank, right? I don't mind the lottery. You're going to get, this is unfair. It should go to a team further down the line, bottom end. But I don't mind, you know, I don't mind the lottery and give some incentive to the teams that are actually, you know, trying to make the playoffs. Even do something more where you give even more higher percentage to the 9th, 10th, 11th teams. Do you know what I mean?
Encourage them to put a good product out there. Yeah,
absolutely. So I don't mind that move. I don't like the tanking. I don't want to see that. And then you give the top pick to those teams. But there's a lot of unhappy people yesterday that it went to the Rangers and not a team like the Red Wings.
Well,
and not just people from Detroit.
Yeah, and they're, well, yeah, except that we all knew it. I mean, the rage about that was loud enough, but it needed to last longer right after the phase one part of the draft lottery situation went by the wayside, because at that point we knew that Detroit wasn't going to get the first overall pick. So, but tanking doesn't necessarily guarantee success either, Zig.
No, I
mean, and look at it this way, like the Houston Astros, right? In 2011, 2012 and 2013, they lost 100-plus games. Like, they were just god-awful and dreadful. 2014, I think they lost 90-some games. And then in 2015, they made the turnaround and, you know, shelved the cheating and all of that. But they've been an elite team ever since. I mean, they've been playoff-bound. They shouldn't have but did win the World Series. And in 2017, they've had a lot of success and continue on a pretty good run off of the tank of the early part of the last decade. But let's use the Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, the so-called Shanna plan. We have absolutely no firm assessment on whether their tank job has paid off in terms of success for the franchise. Yeah, they're a playoff team every year now, but they haven't won a playoff series. They have high-priced, top-notch star talent at the top end of their roster, but it hasn't translated yet. It hasn't translated into any kind of success. So tanking, yes. Tanking is part of the process. You know what tanking is, Zig? It's a combination of two things, I think. Number one, it's you've got brainiacs now who typically come out of brainiac schools who have a process. And it's typically tied to analytics, and I'm not crapping on analytics, but there's a process to doing this. They take over franchises with bad contracts and aging players, and they shuffle those guys out, and they begin the process of rebuilding things. The second thing, and I think that this is just as much a part of it, if not more, is that when you take over a franchise, tearing it down buys you more time. It keeps you employed. If you've got to tear something down over the course of a year or two, heaven knows, maybe 3 years. Look at the Baltimore Orioles. Mike Elias is their general manager, entering his second year, or in his second year right now. That thing's going to take 5 or 6 years at least to fix. Well, if you got to tear it right down to the studs and then build it back up, you can always go to your ownership group and say, well, this is where we are in our plan, and this is where we expect to be 12 months from now. And as long as you attain those benchmarks, you can continue to sell yourself as being on the right path. And who knows, in an industry, coaching, managing, whatever, where you're hired to be fired, maybe you're able to buy yourself 6, 7, or 8 years just going through the so-called tear down and build it back up process. That's what it's all about.
Well, you can't say that the tank job of the Leafs, and I don't even want to call it that. I think they made it look good when Babcock was the coach here, because they looked like they were trying to get in every year, but it looked like the team was having a good season, and you had all these improvements, and you had all guys with good stats, and then all of a sudden they end up with the first overall pick. Like, I understand what you're saying with a tank job, and the Leafs did it for a number of years. And look where they're at now, nowhere different than they were 10 years ago. I get that. I think it's still early, but you know what? The way you win in the league is through the draft, and the higher picks you have, the better chance you're going to have. And I know you can look to Edmonton and saying, what has it done for them, right, with the first overall picks that they've had?
Well, at least they made the second round of the playoffs a few years ago, lost in 7 to Anaheim. I mean, at least they went on a slight bit of a run that one time. I mean, that's more than the Leafs have accomplished so far.
I think the Leafs are ahead of where Edmonton is right now. I'm not saying it's leaps and bounds, but it's they're ahead of where the Oilers are at. I'd be more concerned with them over the Leafs, but not by a large margin. But just the Leafs have the big four. They have a goaltender more than capable of winning. They have the pieces on defense. They have all this stuff. And it's for whatever reason, and I'm sure we're going to be breaking it down over the next couple weeks and months, but Edmonton, when you have Connor and Draisaitl and they can't figure it out, and who they have behind the bench and who they have in management, I'm a little bit more surprised that they kind of haven't figured it out yet. I think the pieces are there for the Leafs, and I don't see a blow up, but definitely they have to make some changes. I don't know how you go into next season without trying to figure out who their secondary or their secondary scoring is going to come from and how they're going to do it. Right. Cause they don't have much room to kind of bring guys in and move pieces around. So that's going to be the challenge for, Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan.
416 number text in, Ziggy. This is right up your alley. Fixed communist sports leagues now. That's it. That's the five letters. That's all. That's the text there.
I'm not even
fixed.
If you
communist sports leagues right now. Yeah, the Pinkos are winning, baby.
I'm kind of kidding. Like, I'm sure it's completely random, but I just couldn't see Lafreniere going to Edmonton, Toronto, or Pittsburgh. It wouldn't be fair. It literally wouldn't. It's just the ball dropping before it goes in. I'm like, okay,
yeah, but so that now didn't have enough.
So now there's effect, now man. there's something in the ball. Like, that's kind of what was going through my mind.
Rub the magic dust on it.
What's in there now? So that's the only thing that comes up. I'm telling you, I saw the Leafs ping pong ball. It went right up and rattled.
Oh, did you see the slow mo? Did you see some of the slow mo replays and like the zoom in still shots?
Oh yeah, it was in. The Leaf ball was in, and it rattled out off the bar.
You know, this everything's always screwing the Leafs. I mean, that's what I realized this morning. That play-in round screwed the Leafs. The lottery ball screwed the Leafs.
Lafreniere, would you feel okay if the Leafs won that pick?
Yes, and I would feel okay.
I wouldn't feel okay with it.
I would feel okay if Edmonton did. I would feel okay if Pittsburgh did. It's one out of eight. And it's not my responsibility, Ziggy, to fix what ails the way that the league handled its draft lottery for COVID this year.
It was what it was. They should have given the ping pong balls to the teams that won the first round. That's what they should have done. Do you win the first play-in round? Ooh. They're the teams that go into the draw.
Except here's the thing. I always love this. People say sometimes, well, the teams that miss the playoffs should get together and play a tournament and have their own little like playoff tournament, and the winner gets the first overall pick. Do you think there is a player on any team who doesn't want to get his summer started and cares so much about a draft pick that isn't even an actual human being yet, because you don't know who your team's going to take, that he's going to play in a 3 or 4 week long tournament to fight for the first overall draft pick? What if he blows a wheel in a contract year?
There's something else. There's something else to that, though. You don't want to bring in the first overall pick that's going to take your job.
Exactly. Every good team needs a face-off, man. Ziggy, not a first overall draft pick.
You know what they do in a lot of the European leagues is that they have the A and the B leagues almost everywhere. And the top one or two teams, depending on which country you're looking at. But like Sweden, the top team, you'd swap one of the teams, the organization. So the bottom team in the Swedish Elite League, they go and play with you'd get dropped, and then the top team from the B league, you'd play in a little bit of you play in a tournament to see who goes into the other league. So they do have that where you're playing the end of the season just to keep your team in the league. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I get it. If you're in a contract year, you get hurt for one of those. It sounds interesting, but I can't see that ever happening, where the non-playoff teams play for the first overall pick. Great idea, fun to chat about, but not happening.
Never going to happen. So as we said off the top of the show, the Raps over the Bucks, no Giannis. So I don't know what you take away from that. But then again, on the Raps side, there was no Kyle, there was no Serge, and there was no Fred VanVleet.
I know we got to go, but I think Milwaukee looks empty without a. I mean, it's just bare bones.
Well, that's going to be the task, right? I mean, and they had Kawhi last year. They dropped the first two games, stormed back, and won the series in six. The task is going to be shutting down Giannis if and when the Raptors meet the Bucks in the playoffs. And if they can do that, they're in pretty good shape. I don't think that there's any question about that. The problem is it's not that easy to shut down Giannis because he's an even better player this year, coming off an MVP award last year. And don't think he won't be motivated and didn't learn a few things from the way that the back half of that series against the Raps played out last spring. We'll get into more of that a little bit later on. The Blue Jays play their home opener in Buffalo tonight. They will debut the Powder Blues. John Paul Morosi will join us at 7:30, and we'll get into the Jays home opener. We'll also ask him, why doesn't Major League Baseball just cancel the St. Louis Cardinals for the rest of the season? I mean, at some point, that's where this is headed, isn't it? Kevin Bieksa, Wendell Clark, all ahead. And at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, Ziggy and I will play yes or no. We'll throw names of Maple Leafs players out there, and we'll say, will they be back or won't they? Yes or no? Hugh Burrell just sat down. You heard his voice earlier. We'll Burrell the lead coming up. Which Leafs will or won't be returning? We'll play yes or no at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. And Dave Maloney at 7:15 will join us of the MSG Radio Network, the Nye Rangers, the top overall draft pick after the fixed lottery. I'm getting a ton of texts, Hugh.
That it's fixed?
Ton of texts.
Oh, my God.
Why does the lottery drum have to be clear? Seems fishy with the guy standing right next to it holding the remote. Why not opaque with black balls or something?
Yeah, I'm down with that comment.
Wouldn't you want the hopper to be clear so you can see the balls actually being mixed up? I don't understand that one at all.
Ziggy is down with the opaque.
Ziggy also feels that the heaviest ball would have been the first one sucked up, too. So his physics is a little questionable.
Ziggy, you got to get your grade 5 science teacher on the line.
Buddy. Yeah. These are Scarborough physics I'm talking about right now, okay? Something. The heavier ball goes up first. So okay.
Who was your grade 7 science teacher? Mr. Smith, Miss Smith, who was it?
Mrs. Snowball is my grade 7 science
Mrs.
teacher.
Mrs. Snowball.
Sir Alexander McKenzie.
Okay, really? Mrs. Snowball. Mrs. Snowball from Sir Alexander McKenzie, circa like 1997. Come on 94, down.
94, 94.
You're the next contestant on randomly dial leadoff.
It's right in the middle of the grunge era. That's all I know.
Right. Here's to Mrs. Snowball. Let's Burrell the lead.
Here we go, boys. All right, so the Leafs did not win the top pick in the NHL draft. It was obviously fixed because it went to the Rangers, right? Just another disappointment for the Leafs, who were less than 24 hours removed from being eliminated by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Columbus coach John Tortorella didn't have a whole lot to say during the series against the Leafs, but now that it's over, he was on the mic yesterday. He was coming to the defense of Leafs coach Sheldon Keefe, who Torts felt was being treated unfairly by the nasty, horrible Toronto media.
And I just can't get over people ripping Sheldon Keefe and his staff as far as the job he's done with the Maple Leaf team. They have done a terrific job with that team. And now this is after the series and all that, and some of the things I read, some of the things I watched last night, I mean, half the pundits in this city think they really know about the game, but they really don't. And it just pisses me off for a fellow coach in this league. And I know it's Toronto, a great city, great hockey town, love being here. But some of the things that he is criticized for is beyond belief to me. And it just shows that people have no clue what's going on in this game. So I just want to support him I'm glad we won, but I want to support him, and because I think him and his staff have done a terrific job with that hockey club. Thank you.
You're welcome. Torts pulling the old, you never played the game, so you don't understand the game card, which I love, by the way. I love when athletes and coaches do that. Are we being too hard on Sheldon Keefe? I didn't think we were.
I didn't know that he was being raked over the coals.
No, if anything, it's his players, not him. I think we all think he's done a terrific job.
If I'm Sheldon Keefe, I'm pulling my hair out because I can't get these guys to play every night.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that his responsibility? At some point, the guys have to care enough.
Ultimately, yeah. Ziggy, we haven't been hard on Keefe, have we?
I'm not quite sure what he was reading or watching because I didn't see it. I didn't see a lot of negativity towards Keefe and the coaching staff. I think people question some moves he made in game five, you can debate on bringing Johnson in after not playing, taking the young kid out, Robertson.
Stacking
the top line, putting Nylander at center, bringing in Marinson and not playing Sandin. I mean, there's a number of things you can question about game five. I think either way, you're gonna lose if you're the coaching staff. I mean, if Johnson scores that goal, they look like a genius, but he played the game he played, and then it looks like not a great decision on bringing him in. So I think you're in a tough spot in a game five like that, and the decisions he made, I don't think he can really come ahead from it. But I didn't see people being harsh on him and calling for him to, you know, for the Leafs to change, to shuffle the coaching staff again. I didn't see anything along those lines. I don't think people were harmed. That's just the stuff I've seen, though. So I don't know what Torts is reading. I don't know where he's getting his information from. But that's just the typical, John Tortorella thing. I mean, it's I wasn't surprised when I heard that stuff. But, yeah, I didn't see it.
I think sometimes people mistake critique for criticism on a personal level. I mean, you can question some of the moves he made in game five, but that's not a personal vendetta. That's just simply questioning tactics, and there's nothing wrong with that. Let's move on to baseball stuff. Major League Baseball's thinking apparently about maybe using a bubble option for the playoffs. Yeah, are we too late for that? Can we still get that done? It's a good idea if we get that far. The question now is, do we get that far?
Yeah, I think they can, for sure. They just have to make sure that the appropriate hotels are available. And the one concern I have is all the games you'd be playing on a grass field and the effect that may have. But yes, there is time. I would argue, Hugh, that there's enough time for the NFL to still do that.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm beating that drum.
They're not going to.
I'm
going to
lose. I'm
going to
die on that. I'm going to die on that hill.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that's a good way to do it. I think it ensures or does a better job at the very least of ensuring player health. And if you hold it, say in Anaheim and Los Angeles, stay in the same hotel, play at two different stadiums, or you can divide the American League, National League up until you get to the World Series. You can even have the American League team play in the Anaheim Stadium in the World Series. The NL team play at Dodger Stadium. You're in the same hotel. You're guaranteed good weather, all of that. Yeah. I think it's the right approach.
Yep, I do too. This is probably why baseball will screw it up somehow.
Yeah, I like the playoff bubble format for Major League Baseball. I think they have to at this point with what happened with the Cardinals. With football, I don't see them ever going to a bubble system. I don't care what happens with Major League Baseball. It will just not happen. I feel like they'd cancel their season before they went to a bubble.
current Met, former Blue Jay Marcus Stroman has opted out of this season because of COVID concerns.
It ended up being a collective family decision for me, something that's been weighing on me daily. Just ended up sitting with my family and kind of assessing all the possibilities and realizing that there's just too many uncertainties, too many unknowns right now. to go out there and truly just put in the health for my family and myself first and foremost.
That's fair. Stroman said it has nothing to do with his calf muscle injury, and it's purely a COVID concern based. The Oakland A's' Ramon Laureano says the reason why he freaked out and started that brawl with the Astros the other day wasn't because he was hit by pitches a couple of times. It was because Astros hitting coach Alex Cintron said something nasty about his mama. Laureano telling ESPN that Cintron said in Spanish, "Something you don't say about my mother." They brawled, which, by the way, is in direct violation of social distancing protocols. And now suspensions are expected. So he said something about his mama. Don't say stuff about other guys' mothers. Just don't.
The Houston Astros.
I know. I used to like the Astros.
Is there like, you talk about organizations in pro sports that move the needle, right? Like, there's no gray area with the Yankees. You love them or you hate them. Mm-hmm. There's no gray area.
At the very least, you respect them.
Yeah, pick an NHL team, whether it's the Leafs or the Habs. Like, there's in Canada, there's no one way or the there's no gray. It's
you
one way or the
like
other.
Both teams,
right?
By the way.
Manchester United. There are franchises. Yep. The Houston Astros just used to exist, and now they're like North American professional sports' biggest villain.
It's public enemy number one. Yeah, they're gross.
But to have a coach, Ziggy, I don't know how you feel about this, but to have a coach chirp a guy, like an actual player in the game, and then be three guys deep, protected by a line of like three. I don't know if you saw the highlight.
Oh, yeah.
He was chirping from the dugout, and he had three guys in front of him protecting him from Laureano.
That's what bothers me.
It's
is
like,
the whole.
Jeez, man. And Cintron used to play.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just Bush. It's gross.
I've seen coaches chirp players before. Usually it's something that happens during the game and not something personal. I've also seen some personal things being thrown around before.
But mothers are off limit, though, aren't they?
Yeah, nothing like that. Nothing personal there, but just, you know, stuff that shouldn't be said either. Like, I don't think coaches should be talking to players at all. I mean, I've been on the bench for two seasons with UFT, and I have not talked to a player. And I've actually had players direct comments at me to try to get me to get engaged.
That's understandable.
which I never do, and I never get involved. Nothing malicious, but just stuff where, you know, the game gets heated and things get said. But, yeah, the whole personal stuff with the family – uncle, come on.
Let's wrap up with this. COVID concerns with the college football season in jeopardy. Meetings today amongst the Power 5 conferences, Big 10, Pac-12, SEC, Big 12, and the ACC. Yesterday, a report that the Big 10 had already decided not to play. Yesterday, there was also a players led movement by Clemson's Trevor Lawrence saying that they want to play. Trump even tweeted that he wants them to play as well. So we'll see what happens after today's meetings in the NFL. Meantime, Patriots receiver Julian Edelman doesn't have Tom Brady to throw him the ball anymore. And Edelman said yesterday, it's time to set the bromance aside and move on.
And you wish him well. And that's when you instantly start thinking about what you have to do to prepare yourself to go out and contribute and help the team for the upcoming year. So obviously, yeah, we played a lot of ball together. I love him to death, but you know, the train keeps moving, as it will when, you know, I'm not playing here or something. I mean, it just always keeps going. So, you know, we got to worry about the people that we have here and you know, try to prepare ourselves the best we can with the situation that we're in with all everything we're dealing with.
Edelman, of course, one of the few players left on the Patriots after eight of them opted out of the season.
Yeah, they're running away from Bill Belichick all in the name of COVID, huh?
Sure.
Now that the
neatly disguised.
Now that the big man has gone to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I like Cam Newton in New England, though. I want to see if that works.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's like a fresh coat of paint.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't wait to see if that's. I'm looking forward to that more than what Brady does. And
like, I find myself cheering for Cam Newton. Like, I'm cheering for Cam Newton to bounce back after all the injuries.
Yeah,
such a fun player to watch.
Yeah, it's not Cam Newton of 5 years ago, but he can still be effective in the right system. And if anybody can get the most out of a player, it's Bill Belichick.
The NFL season will be canceled 1 week before the Buffalo Bills have a chance to clinch the AFC East.
Of course,
because they're not allowed to have nice things.
That's right.
Not allowed to have nice things. Poor Bills fans. I do think they're going to win the AFC East if we have a season. I wavered a little bit when Newton became a Patriot, but with all of the opt-outs, I'm back on the Bills wagon.
Yeah, I mean, other than Edelman, who's he throwing to? Exactly.
Yeah. Get me the list.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was like, are you really asking me that question?
No, I'm gonna go to the
I feel like
now.
I should know this. Wendell Clark, Kevin Bieksa in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll focus on hockey. John Paul Morosi at 7:30. The Blue Jays play their home opener tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the COVID Marlins are into Buffalo. And the Blue Jays will debut on the field. They're powder blues, looking sharp. What is the future of the St. Louis Cardinals? They've still only played 5 games dealing with COVID. We'll get into that with John and the potential for playoff hub cities in baseball. The Raps over the Bucks will play yes or no at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Which Leafs will return and which will be gone? I'll ask Ziggy those questions. And the phone lines are open right now at 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We got $200 in Untuckit gift cards to give away. And we'll do that when we play All or Nothing next. All right, All or Nothing. 3 true or false questions. You got to get them all right or all wrong. So if you answer the first one incorrectly, you got to get the next two intentionally incorrect. $200 in Untuckit gift cards are up for grabs today, as we didn't have a winner yesterday, so the $100 number carries over. Steve in New Lowell is this morning's contestant.
New Lowell? Like Lowell, Massachusetts?
Yes, maybe he's a Loch Monster. Let's see. Steve, where is New Lowell?
New Lowell is about 25 minutes west of Barrie.
There you go. Okay, all right.
Wow.
We like that. All right, well, good luck to you. $200 in Untuckit gift cards up for grabs. Ziggy, you got question number one.
All right, the Jays finally have a home game tonight in Buffalo when they play at Salem Field. Just like the Rogers Center, it also has a retractable roof. True or false?
I'm going to go false.
That is correct. It is an open-air stadium.
Yes, an open-air minor league triple-A stadium on 16th. Swan Street.
Swan, yeah, that's even funnier, is it not?
Swan Street in Buffalo. All right, you're in good shape here, Steve. Get the next two correct, and you're a winner.
All right, Steve from New Lowell. What the hell happened to the old Lowell? That's what I want to know. All right, Steve.
How did I know that was
good? Yeah, it was there. It was on
right
a
there.
All right, Steve, pay attention. Former Blue Jay and current New York Met Marcus Stroman made news yesterday when he decided to opt out of the baseball season. Is that true or is that false?
That is true, Hugh.
It is true. It is true. COVID concern said it has nothing to do with his recent calf injury.
All right, Steve. I'm not going to give you a hint per se, but I'm just going to encourage you to really listen to the details of this question. Here it is for $200 in Untuckit gift cards. Wendell Clark is our guest at 8:30 this morning. Wendell went first overall to the Maple Leafs when they won the draft lottery in 1985. True or false?
False.
Yes, good man.
Yeah.
Oh boy. There you go, Steve. Woo-hoo. I mean, Wendell,
that was a trick question.
I know. Producer Mike Gentile just
wow.
But Steve wasn't fooled. I like it.
I almost got fooled.
Well, Wendell did go first overall, but of course there was no draft lottery back then.
I was like, was there a lottery in 85?
No, there was no draft lottery. The Leafs just pulled up the stinky rear of the NHL that year. 21st out of 21 teams, baby. And that got him Wendell Clark. It's also true. Wendell will be our guest at 8:30. Can't wait to talk to the great former Leafs captain, friend of the show. Kevin Bieksa will be along an hour from now, top of the 8 o'clock hour. John Paul Morosi at 7:30. Dave Maloney is a Rangers analyst on the MSG radio network. New York ends up with the first overall selection in the draft lottery. The Raps beat the Bucks, but a bunch of guys were resting and will play yes or no. Which Leafs will be back and which won't? That's next. Well, we're dealing with the conspiracy theorists that Hugh was referring to in his top of the hour update. Kyle from Cambridge, the Rangers ball was heavier because it had a small magnet in it, which is why it didn't bounce out like our Leafs ball. And now I have to try and sell my Lafreniere Leafs jersey. Ziggy, you got people.
Heavier ball? Yeah, the public's on my side.
You can start your own website. Just sell tinfoil caps. Right out of your Scarborough basement, you know?
What do I name the website? Pundits R Us? Like, I had to look up actually what pundits actually means.
You had to look up what pundits means? Really? Really?
I might change my bio.
You're a pundit now.
Just an average pundit.
You're not a co-host. You're not an analyst. You're just a pundit. Specializing in punditry.
That's what my bio is going to be.
Specializing in punditry. I'm a pundit.
I love that word.
It's a good word. It is a good word.
Is it the fact that it's a good word, or did the torts just say it and now I love it?
Pundit.
I don't know. The pundits in this city.
Yeah.
Am I a pundit now?
Yeah, I think you are.
Would you consider me a pundit?
I think you are. I think I'm going to refer to you now as a pundit.
Okay.
Let's lead off with Ziggy, a pundit, and Scotty Mack. You're like everybody else now. You skip the 20 years of journalism and go right to the hot takes. I mean, that's it. You can be a pundit.
That's
our world. Right into punditry.
There's basket weaving.
Yeah, well,
and punditry.
Yes, basket weaving and punditry. I believe there's a school for both of those things, both in the same place, and Notre Dame's football team probably plays them. Well, that's a joke if you care about college football, which, by the way, may not be happening this year. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, Dave Maloney. We'll have a brief chat with him from MSG Radio in New York City. The Rangers get the first overall draft pick. John Paul Morosi at 7:30. The Raps winners last night. No Kyle, no Serge, no Freddie Van Vliet. No Giannis on the Bucks side. Matt Thomas had a huge night. Chris Boucher led the way with 25 points. That's a career high for him. So good to see the bench guys getting minutes. The guys who grind day in and day out at practice and being rewarded against, even though no Giannis, a pretty good basketball team. The Raptors have secured the second overall seed in the Eastern Conference. We knew they weren't going to move up and catch Milwaukee or drop down and fall beneath Boston. They do know now that the Brooklyn Nets, bleep Brooklyn, right, Masai? Bleep Brooklyn will be their first round playoff opponent. And of course, there's no Kyrie, no KD. That's a Nets roster that is stripped bare. And what's going on out West is pretty amazing. There's 4-5 teams within a half game or a game of that final playoff spot. So we'll keep tabs on that. It's time for a little yes or no. Are you ready for this, Mr. Pundit?
Yay or nay?
Yay or nay? A little yes or no. And I don't just want some analysis here. I want some.
I like the yay or nay.
You prefer yay or nay?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do yay or nay with pundit Ziggy. Because you're gonna not just give us a yay and nay, you're gonna give us some insight. You're gonna be a pundit. We're gonna ask which Leafs are coming back and which Leafs aren't coming back. Yay or nay, yes or no, with pundit Ziggy. I don't know why you like that word so much, but
it's so good. It's torts. It's good. It's mostly torts, though.
Yeah.
You pundits. If you didn't hear me, you got to listen to his press conference if you didn't hear it. We'll play it again later.
Yeah, defending Sheldon Keefe from all the pundits who are apparently ripping on Sheldon Keefe, even though I don't think many people at all ripped on Sheldon Keefe. I think a lot of people ripped on the players, and a lot of people are questioning whether Kyle Dubas's MO in terms of building a hockey team can translate into success in, you know, the spring, or in this case, the summer, when it counts. Because we should remember, by the way, that the Leafs were almost a nay, not a yay, but a nay to make the playoffs pre-COVID. Remember we had the Panther tracker? They were three games from
being out of the playoffs.
They had Florida right up against them. And they were in the wild card conversation as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, there was no guarantees back in the winter. We've forgotten all of that because COVID happened and it was so long ago. All right. Some of these are real brief. So save the punditry for when we need a pundit. Like Austin Matthews is coming back. That's a yay, right? We're both in on that? Yay.
I'm in yay on that one.
Okay. Mitchell Marner, yay or nay? He of the $10.893 million cap hit.
Are you trying to sway me with that, saying he didn't deserve it?
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to sway you into any kind of punditry. I'm saying he makes a lot of coin.
He's here.
He's here?
Yay.
So we're a yay on that. I think the top four. Tavares is a yay.
Well, you're not trading your captain if they do that.
Well, and it's also
they blow up the whole team. Just get rid of everyone.
If they trade Tavares, it's a serious, serious admission.
That's not about happening.
Not about the player, but that the cap hit, the contract is prohibitive and problematic. William Nylander, yay or nay? The pundit pauses. The pundit pauses to consider his punditry.
For some of these guys, we need to set the table a little bit better. Like, do I think they're coming back or do I are?
The question is he coming back or not? If you think he's staying, give me a yay.
I think he's staying now. I don't think they're touching the big four. I think they're going to give it one more shot. So he's yay for Nylander.
All right.
So there you go.
Now we get into the weeds a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got three players who I consider, it doesn't matter if they play on the same line or not, or they do sometimes and other times they don't. We've got three players here who I consider to be third liners, who total a combined $11.1 million against the salary cap. So you have a third line that is taking up more than one-eighth of your salary cap. And those three players are Kasperi Kapanen, who makes $3.2 million a year for two more years, Andreas Janssen, who makes $3.4 million for three more years, and Alexander Kerfoot, who makes $3.5 million for three more years. So let's take these players individually, a yay or a nay. So if you even doubt that he's returning, you can nay it. Kasperi Kapanen is a nay for me.
The Janssen or Kapanen, one of them doesn't come back. I can't decide who.
I'm going nay Kapanen, yay Janssen.
Okay, I'll do the same as that. I would lean that way, but one of them won't be back.
I just think there's I think what Kasperi Kapanen is what he is. Ziggy, I love the speed.
Third liner. You can't play him in your top two lines.
Like, he's proven he couldn't elevate into the top two lines.
It's not that he can't elevate. Here, let me tell you about Kapanen.
Be a pundit.
And it's not that he can't elevate. It's just, it's hard to do it every night. What makes the top players so special? We'll use the top six. I like the top nine, but we'll go with the top six. What makes the top six guys so special and is that they do it every night. Kapanen can play like a top six forward. It's just, it is hard to do it every night against the top two defensemen. It is really difficult when you're going against them for the majority of your shifts. In a guy like him, I think he's very effective, but we've seen what he is now. And you're going to have those lapses. And if you're a top two guy with this Leafs makeup right now, it's tough to put yourself in that conversation where, yeah, I'm one of your go-to guys. I'm not saying he can't get there. He might not be there yet in his career. It might take him a couple more years.
There's not as natural a finish, which is fine. He doesn't have the natural finish of the more high-end offensive guys, and there's a lot of skating sometimes, but not a lot of much else. And I just think we reach a point here with the cap constraints that 3.2 for a third line winger is too much, especially when you got 3.4 on the other side. And I think there's more upside for Johnsson. Here's one, Alex Kerfoot. I'm going yay, because unless the right deal is out there, Zig, this is all that's left of the Nazem Kadri trade.
They're going to try to move him. Nay.
So you're in nay.
I'm not saying he won't be back. Like, I think it's going to be tough to move him. But I think they're going to try to find... And it's not so much him. It's more the fact that this team needs to find that secondary help. Not so much scoring, just momentum swings, pressure. When things aren't going well with your top guys.
Give me Craig. Give me a little bit of Craig.
Yeah, just a little bit of Craig in your game. You know, just either play a team tough or some good shifts down low, the odd big goal. I think he's played well. It's not that he's been bad. They're looking for something else.
All right. We got to rip through these two. Tyson Barrie
is gone.
Give him the horsey noise, the nay. Absolutely.
Nay.
It's not a yay, it's a nay. Cody Ceci.
Nay, gone.
And Frederik Andersen.
Oh.
That's 1 year left. 1 year left on the contract. So does he come in as a lame duck? Does he come in as a lame duck, Ziggy?
He's not going to want to finish the season if they don't rup him. And I don't think the Leafs are going to want him if he doesn't want to sign an extension. The thing is, he's making $5 million. Try to pick a better $5 million goaltender right now in the NHL. This is what I was talking about yesterday with a couple buddies. Is that? I talked more about Andersen yesterday than I probably have the whole season. Just on the show and after the show all day. He, for $5 million, it's great value. He still lets in the odd soft goal. It's not even that they're soft goal. It's just bad timing or, you know, we had Razor on yesterday, Andrew Raycroft, and it's just the goals from the side and against Boston the last couple of years. It's just that one odd goal. And where the Leafs team is at right now, they can't let those in. Has Andersen outperformed other teams' goaltenders? No. He has been outperformed the last number of years in big games. You can keep him at that number. You have to re-up him. I like him. I like him what he does for this team. He can handle the big stage. I still think he's the MVP, and I'd keep him.
All right. So you give him a yay. I say a yay as well, just because I just don't think that there are better options out there, unless something totally and completely unforeseen comes up. All right, that's the debut of yay or nay. We'll bring that back with our favorite pundit, Mike Zigomanis. John Paul Morosi at 7:30. They are celebrating in New York this morning where the Rangers did win the draft lottery. And so Alexis Lafreniere, it's believed, will be the first overall draft pick. He will join Kaapo Kakko, who was the second overall pick to the New York Rangers last year. Their rebuild is in full swing. Dave Maloney is an analyst with the MSG radio network, and he joins us now. Dave, good morning. Thanks for getting up and doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys this morning?
We're doing great. So, I mean, the organization, I would imagine, has got to be excited. You know, Panarin had such a wonderful year for you guys. Mika Zibanejad, turns out that was a steal of a trade with the Ottawa Senators a few years back. Kakko's a kid. He'll continue to develop, and now the Rangers get to throw in a top overall draft pick into this rebuild mix. The franchise has to be happy with where things are as it sits today.
Well, there's no question. I mean, if you can't see some light at the end of the tunnel here, that really began back in 2017 with that draft when they traded Derek Stepan and started to kind of disassemble a team that had gone to the finals and for a franchise and the conference finals. And then, of course, the famous letter that was sent out to say which way they were heading and all those different things. And I think Jeff Gorton and his staff have gone about their business the right way, building a franchise. And along the way, you need a little luck also. I mean, when you look at Sidney Crosby, but for a flip of the coin, could have been playing with Getzlaff and Perry in Anaheim. Right. So Pittsburgh was the benefit of a little bit of luck in the lottery. So I think all in all, really do. Obviously, I'm a member of the Ranger community and going to speak well of what they've done. But I really do credit the management with doing the right things to give themselves a chance to build correctly. And then you get a little luck along the way. And Lady Luck shone once again upon a franchise that has not had a first overall pick since 1965. And there's certainly some excitement continues to build. I thought that there's a lot of good things going on in the franchise, but the best is yet to come.
What'd you make of the team in the play-in round against the Hurricanes? I know the Hurricanes have a great team. I mean, yeah. Sebastian Aho he's one of my favorite players in the league to watch. Brendan Moore has them playing great. They're getting great goaltender. What'd you kind of make of your guys in the three games?
Well, it's pretty hard not to disagree with your observation, right? I mean, first of all, you have to acknowledge a team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals a year before. And I just thought that the Rangers, again, at the start of the season, had they, you know, their aspirations were certainly to be competitive. And why, I don't think that's any different than a team that gets out or a franchise that gets to the starting line. But realistically, I think if, so when you looked at it and said they were going to have a chance to be a playoff team, you'd take that, you'd sign up. But in 1979, it had to be part of a Ranger team that went to the finals against Montreal. We had beaten the Canadiens three times in the regular season. And we were really out. We were done in five in the finals. And the playoffs are a total different breed. And you have, the only way you know how to get, the, you know, to play there is to get there and suffer the growing pains and be patient enough to know that rarely is there success with a team. Now, again, Carolina went 9 years without making the playoffs. So they've built a real core now of talented, skilled players. You got Neshkas, and it's got Aho, who's just, as you mentioned, a brilliant player, and let alone a blue line that's deep and played without two of their top three defenders. So I just think, you know, it wasn't a rude awakening, but again, I think it just proves that A, when you come to postseason play in you know, the best hockey league in the world, the ice gets a little bit smaller, and the only way you know how to play there is to play there. So the Rangers had this, addition of their franchise. It's had a little taste of it, and hopefully they'll learn and grow from there. But, Carolina's a pretty good team.
Dave Maloney, our guest from the MSG Radio Network. The Rangers win the draft lottery in the presentation last night. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, another question with the Rangers right now is what's going to happen in net. A lot of people, you know, saying maybe Lundqvist has played his last game in a Ranger uniform. Well, how do you think the goaltending situation is going to shake out?
Well, hey, listen, I don't know any more than what we all kind of surmise from the outside. I think it's unfair to pass judgment unless you are John Davidson or Jeff Gorton and perhaps even the owner, Mr. Dolan. Henrik has been such an important part of a franchise for the span of his career. And again, the last couple of years, he's gotten out of the gate in a hurry, and his numbers have rolled over in January. And it's interesting. I know I listened to you fellows opine and observe about Anderson in Toronto. And I think a goaltender, you know, at a certain point, particularly playoff time, it's not so much the one that he stops, it's that one that he lets in. And as time has went on for Henrik, those ones become a little more suspect, right? And down this stretch, Shesterkin was clearly the guy that they were riding on. And Georgiev was the guy that they counted on for 2 years. So what do you do with a guy whose sweater's going up in the building 5 minutes after he retires or moves on, and he's making $8.5 million for another year? So I think the things that have been in play for the last couple of seasons, Henrik's been very involved in having a voice in the future of his future as a Ranger, and he's offered to stay in the franchise, but I think now it's clear he's probably slotted as number three in a depth chart. And I do think that whatever happens, it will be a multi-headed decision between management, Henrik, and perhaps even the owner. So and I do think also, too, it won't be long before the Ranger fans, when Henrik does move on, realize that they had a real special player in net in the most important position in the National Hockey League for a long time.
We'll leave it there, Dave, and really appreciate your time. Thank you for this. Nice step for the Rangers franchise, the way the lottery ball came up last night. Enjoy Lafreniere. Should be a good one for you, and we'll certainly reach out next season.
Yeah, please do that, guys, and I really appreciate the call, and enjoy the rest of your summer.
All right, Dave Maloney of the MSG Radio Network, an analyst on the Rangers broadcasts. Kevin Bieksa, Wendell Clark, more hockey in the 8 o'clock hour. The Raps over the Bucks, and John Paul Morosi on the night the Blue Jays kick off their Buffalo portion of their home schedule. They'll debut the Powder Blues. And what are we going to do about the St. Louis Cardinals? They're not playing the Pirates today or tomorrow, and their Thursday doubleheader with Detroit has been postponed. When will they play next, and at what point is there no point in bringing the Cardinals back? John Paul Morosi coming up. Spencer from Barrie texts into 590-590. Saw a funny tweet this morning saying the Thrashers and Leafs have advanced to the second round the same number of times since 2004.
Actually, I'm actually getting some heat right now from my comment I made earlier.
Well, you made many comments earlier. Which one is getting you heat?
The fact that when I pose the question, what's really changed in the last 10 years with the Leafs? Obviously this team the roster is better. This is a better team than 10 years ago. It's just how far have they gotten 10 years ago versus today in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, they haven't. And in fact, that's not entirely true. The Winnipeg Jets, who used to be the Atlanta Thrashers, have advanced. They've won playoff series.
That's correct, but I'm just saying how, from the Leafs standpoint, in the last 10 years, what's really changed? Give me something.
They have better players on paper.
Okay, that's but it. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, I mean, doesn't mean
where's
anything.
Where does that get me?
Yeah.
Yeah, until they actually win.
Yeah,
so that's where I just, I don't know. Yeah, make a case for me.
The only, the old Chris Farley line, that and a nickel will get you a jack squat. Matt Foley, motivational speaker, living in a van down by the river. Here's a guy who lives in a palatial mansion on the outskirts of Detroit. He is our MLB insider, John Paul Morosi. Hello, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. I certainly would not call it palatial, but it is an abode here in Ann Arbor, where we are. I suppose potentially today finding out if there's going to be football this fall. Much of the discussion here lately around that, but also the Tigers playing well, and the Jays now opening up at home tonight, so it should be a good day in sports today as well.
What will Jim Harbaugh get up to in Ann Arbor if there is no college football season? Who's that man chewing through the chain link fence on the side of the road? Oh, it's Jim Harbaugh.
That is a great question. The college football conversation here is multi-layered indeed.
You bet.
It's obviously a question that is before a lot of university presidents. So I will leave that to them to decide. But I hope that public health remains the foremost consideration for everybody.
You bet. So the Jays start tonight. They're going to debut the Powder Blues. It's their first Buffalo home game, and the Miami Marlins are in town. Arden Zwelling wrote a piece on Sportsnet.ca. There were some aerial shots and more close-up shots of the work that has gone into making Salem Field in Buffalo viable for Major League Baseball over the next 6 weeks or so. John, I mean, I think from the Blue Jays' perspective, it's just good to finally have a place that they can call home every other week.
I agree. And I really want to credit the Jays, their players, and their front office for all the work they've put in, because they have been obviously given a set of very difficult circumstances to deal with, not of their own creation, obviously, and they have handled it admirably. We have heard almost, I think, zero complaining in terms of the entire organization and the players about what they've had to deal with and not be home at all the last several weeks. So I think that's first and foremost, they've just done a great job of handling it. And second of all, I saw the video as well. The Jays tweeted of Vladdy taking BP last night. I think the ball's going to fly there at Salem Field. There's going to be a lot of runs scored. This is going to be, I think, off from an offensive standpoint, potentially Coors Field East with the ball flying a bit, which I think will be exciting. And I think one of the key things as well, and I know Ross Atkins told this to Dan Shulman recently, is the lighting. The lighting is better now, obviously. They brought in additional light towers. The lights themselves have been improved. It looks like a Major League Park is supposed to look at night, which is, I think, a great tribute to everybody that's been involved in the project. And I think also they're going to do everything they can to maximize the spaces on the concourses and keep people outside as much as possible. I know from having visited ballparks, especially in Cincinnati, where I've been a couple different times here in the last couple weeks, even the players' dining area, so the clubhouse meal situation, they try to move that outside wherever possible. So I'm sure that'll be out of the concourse as well at Salem Field. So it's now up to the Jays to make it a home field advantage and make it to their liking and have their style suit what they've got there. And I do think the ball is going to be flying. Maybe not when Ryu's on the mound because he's been great, but I think that the ball is going to be flying in general, I believe, at Salem Field.
From a player standpoint, though, I think I'd want to ask what the living situation would be like. Going to Buffalo, I'm okay going to a minor league park. I'm okay trying to make adjustments to it and make it so it's kind of comfortable. But are these guys going to be in a hotel? Are they going to get guys condos? I mean, those are the kind of questions I think players would be asking. Are they just going to stuff them on Chippewa Street somewhere above on second floors?
I don't know the answer for sure about what the living situation will be like for everybody. I would imagine just because of the duration of the times that they're there, they're not going to be there longer than a week at a time at any point. So I would say, just given the number of homestands we're actually going to play there, I would say hotels are probably going to be the likely answer on that, just because to get an apartment where you're going to be there for probably a total of 21 days, give or take, for the balance of the year. I think with those three homestands, I would be surprised if they went the route of a full apartment for guys. I mean, maybe they will for some, but I think the key thing is just being able to almost have a place where you know that you're going to come back to. It's certainly not uncommon for players to live out of a hotel for the last couple months of the season. Really, we're almost to the spot where September call-ups in baseball are known for likely living in a hotel for the last month of the year, and we're now, 7 weeks left in the season? So I would imagine hotel's the way to go, but I think just having a place to call home and know where you're going to be coming back to and develop that familiarity, even just having a home clubhouse, a place to put your stuff. I mean, they haven't had to put a place to just be quote-unquote home and to even just let their stuff remain for a while since the end of summer camp. So I think it's a really admirable the way they've handled everything, and I think it's going to be a great day in a complicated time for the Blue Jays today.
John Paul Morosi is Leadoff's Major League Baseball insider from MLB Network. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The teams that have played the most games are up to 18 now, Seattle, San Francisco. The St. Louis Cardinals are stuck on 5, and this is, of course, tied to their COVID outbreak. Their series with Pittsburgh yesterday, today, tomorrow has been postponed. Their doubleheader scheduled with Detroit on Thursday has been postponed. Again, stuck on 5 games. Do we reach a point here at some point, John, where Major League Baseball says to the St. Louis Cardinals, just pack it in and we'll work the rest of the schedule in the central cluster around you? Like, just your season's over.
That's a great question. I think that it's a very fair one that the league is going to have to think about. Right now, they'd have to be able to it basically be doubleheaders all the time just to fit in the number of games left in the number of days that have been allocated. I don't think they're quite at that stage yet. Obviously, there's been no announcement to that effect of just telling them to end their season, but it would not surprise me if at some point in time that became the choice, simply because, to your point, the logistics are starting to get complicated. You also wonder about the integrity of the schedule and say, well, is it worth it to get one team involved to make almost everybody else in the central pod play doubleheaders at various times over the last 5-6 weeks of the season? It's a big ask just to get everything really aligned to make one team able to play. And so I don't think we're there yet, but it's a great question. And I think if we're not seeing tangible signs of progress by next week, it becomes an even more likely scenario, simply because if you're going to have the number of games the number of minimum games, let's say, to make the playoffs, and probably the commissioner has to wait on that decision until he's got a better sense of just how many teams are going to play 50 or 55 games or maybe even 45. But we're almost at that point now where the Cardinals will have a hard time playing 45 games, even with doubleheaders. And if that's the point, and if you can't even play 3/4 of the season, it does really raise the question of, okay, is it really worth the squeeze here to put all the effort in to make sure that they play games? So it's an excellent point that you make, Scott, and I do think that the next week to 10 days are very crucial in that regard.
If they can't go and play these games, why not just send a taxi squad? Every team has a taxi squad, right? They're all in their own bubble. Why not just send one of them to play their games?
Yeah, another great question, but I think the key thing there, Mike, is the fact that the taxi squad or the alternate training site probably does not have the full you would not have a fully competitive major league group, I would imagine, from the alternate training site. And the thing is, one of the real issues here is that you don't even know at this point, because you haven't waited long enough, who has been definitively cleared or who is still at risk for developing an infection. There's a belief that while it took a while for Lane Thomas and Ryan Helsley to test positive, that they were not infected during the course of traveling back or the workouts that took place at Busch Stadium last week, but rather part of the initial infection. And it just took a week to show up. And so if you wanted to have some competitive integrity to your club, it really is, I think, hard to just fully import that group of players and not know really exactly how many other players from the current group would still be able to go, and if that's going to be a major league competitive outfit. I mean, it's a very good question, but I just think that without knowing more information about the infection and where the whole team is, it just doesn't feel like that's the right way to go at this point. Now, could they evaluate it going forward? Maybe, but they're still at the stage now where they're just waiting to get more information about the initial outbreak, which is now 2 weeks old.
Our old buddy Marcus Stroman here in Toronto opting out. If you look at the deal, I mean, Anthony Kay, John, is a kid who is already serviceable to Charlie Montoyo. Whether he is a back end of the rotation starting pitcher or in a case like this, a left-hander out of the bullpen that Charlie can count on. Simeon Woods Richardson is still a teenager and has high upside. It's quite possible now, with Marcus opting out and accruing enough service time to enter free agency in the offseason, that he makes only the 11 starts he did for the New York Mets last year.
Right.
Disappointing from the Mets perspective. I don't doubt that. Marcus was rehabbing a torn calf and was almost ready to come back, but he called it. He said, look, I'm not potentially exposing myself to COVID. And to Marcus's credit, he sits back well injured and sees what's gone on in Miami and the scare in Philadelphia and now with the St. Louis Cardinals. And he says, I'm not putting myself or my family at risk.
And you have to respect him for making that call, and I do. And I think that was a case where Marcus, to your point, I read some of his comments about members of his extended family who are always close to his mom and concerning about exposing them to COVID-19. To me, it is impossible to take issue with a player who makes this decision for any reason, but certainly when it's for family and concern of loved ones, you have to support him 100%. And I'm sure the Mets will. I'm sure that anybody that knows Marcus and is a friend of his will. And I think you're right about where this overall, the question now goes about what Marcus does next. Of course, to your point, he's accrued enough time to be a free agent after the season is over. He's giving up, let's be clear here, he's giving up several million dollars that he's not going to earn this year because he is opting out. And I think that, again, you've got to respect someone who's making the decision and giving up that amount of money for that reason. The Jays, I think, on their side, again, hindsight now, thinking about how many starts Marcus actually made for the Mets, you have to say from the Jays' perspective that they did incredibly well in that trade and in terms of what they've got back in both current and future value. The clock on what Marcus gave the Mets, because of various circumstances that obviously are out of everybody's control, but that clock is now stopped. And of course, they did not make the playoffs during his time there. That's obvious. And so now in retrospect, the Jays, last year, they got a lot of criticism for that deal. And I think that in retrospect now, if you're the Blue Jays, you can feel very proud of the group of talent that you brought back for Marcus Stroman in that trade last year.
You think Stroman's like a 3-year guy on term in a free agency contract?
That sounds about right. I think so. I feel like term, we're probably better right now at gauging what term is than what the money is,
yeah,
because of all the uncertainty. But I go back to the Mookie Betts deal was incredibly reassuring. I realize it's a former MVP, but that was reassuring that at least the elite teams will still be able to spend, and I think that was a very good data point. So I think 3 years is very fair for Marcus. It's an interesting free agent market from a pitching standpoint. Trevor Bauer, we'll see if he stays to his word and only signs a 1-year deal. But I think Marcus, with everything he does, his work ethic, what a competitor he is, I think 3 years at the least is something that he'll be able to look at this winter.
All right, you and your Wings. Enjoy Lafreniere, John.
I wasn't going to mention hockey at all. We got off talking about college football to start.
Yeah.
So guys, I was watching with you. I was empathizing with you, and sorry to see the result of the game on Sunday. But onward, my friends, to the draft and the Raptors representing Toronto and Canada quite well, as they always do.
We'll talk next Monday. Always look forward to it.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
John Paul Morosi, Leadoff's MLB insider. And we're giving away a huge prize starting next week. Listen to Sportsnet 590 The Fan to score a brand new 70-inch LG UHD TV, courtesy of Brentview Electronics. Create the best seat in the house right at home with this flat-screen TV that has 4K active HDR, Bluetooth, ultra surround sound, and so much more. Stay tuned for more details and keep an eye on our contests page at sportsnet.ca/590. Wendell Clark, Kevin Bieksa next hour, Hugh Burrell in studio. Who the hell is playing and when? Next. Burrell back into studio for Who the Hell is Playing and When,
which is might be the catchiest name of all of our segments. So yay or nay?
I have no idea when. I think Tampa Bay and Columbus plays at 3 today. Am I right?
That's it. You are.
So
you
I know
right.
That.
Yeah, there are four games as we enter the first round of the playoffs. Columbus and Tampa Bay at 3 o'clock. You can catch that on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 5:30. One of the Canadian teams is into action. The Flames and the Dallas Stars on Sportsnet and CBC. 5:30, 8 o'clock. Carolina and Boston. This is a very series. Sportsnet, CBC, and Sportsnet 360 for that one. And the nightcap at 10:30, the Chicago Blackhawks and my Vegas Golden Knights. Right across Sportsnet. And baseball's more your jam. At 6:30 tonight, it's the Miami Covids taking on the Blue Jays and Salem Field in Buffalo. Sportsnet 1 and, of course, Sportsnet 590 The Fan with that.
It's just all coming up, Hugh, eh? You got Montreal, you got Las Vegas. My two teams, the Leafs and the Kraken. they're either done or not existing yet.
Neither are playing completely in the next round of the playoffs. Huh?
Oh. All right, we got to get back to the punditry here.
Yes.
Wendell Clark at 8:30, friend of the show. And coming up next, Kevin Bieksa. John Tortorella, Bieksa's former head coach, came to the defense of Sheldon Keefe. Was there reason to be critical of the Leafs head coach for anything that happened in Game 5 or in the series against Columbus in general? Ziggy and I will ask Kevin next. Former Leafs captain Wendell Clark will be along at 8:30. We'll get his thoughts on the way it all ended for the Maple Leafs. Kevin Bieksa, I'm just going by what producer Mike Gentile has on our lineup here, Ziggy. Sportsnet hockey analyst. Wonder if he is a pundit now,
you think
too.
We can include him in our punditry?
I think you got to ask him. I think you got to ask him. John Tortorella says that there are pundits out there who were inappropriately ripping on Sheldon Keefe. And I don't know. I just don't think a lot of the criticism has been thrown at Keefe. I think it's been thrown at Dubas, thrown at some of the Maple Leafs players. There's no question about that. May also get into a bit of the yes or no game that we were playing earlier with Kevin. Which mm-hmm. Leafs does he think will be back? Which Leafs does he think will not return? And Kevin Bieksa is with us now. How are you, Kev?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're good. How's the grind? I mean, you guys are doing a terrific job on the broadcast, but this, you know, you're used to grinding through the playoffs as a player. What's the first experience been like for you so far as a broadcaster?
It's been good. I'm in the middle of back-to-back days off, so I'm up at my lake house and enjoying some of the last few days of summer, but I don't think I've ever watched this much hockey before in my life, to be honest. Like, I don't know what Ziggy was like, but I wasn't a player that watched hockey when I played. Like, I watched my shifts on the iPad at the rink, and that was about it. I didn't watch any other games. The occasional game I'd watch at home with my son, as he got older, but that's about it. So it's been a lot of hockey watching.
Yeah, the first 6 months doing media, I think I watched more games than 17 years of junior and pro hockey. Like, I'm a huge fan of the game, too, but I had never seen that many games. And I think for me, just how early and how late all the pundits are actually working, that's another thing, right? Because you got guys starting at 6 o'clock on air in the radio. And, I mean, how late are you there some nights? You got to be there, what, 1, 2 o'clock, kind of Eastern Standard? You've been up?
Yeah. Yeah, there was some 14-hour days and some 12-hour days with the triple headers. And I don't know what the next round – I mean, I do know what the next round looks like. I don't think there'll be too many triple headers, but there will be, I think, for game four. So, it's a lot of hockey for sure. But, you know, they do a good job of taking care of you in studio, and it's a different kind of grind than the actual playing. But it's fun. I thought it was a pretty good round, the first qualifying round of playoffs.
Yeah, just last one on your playing career. We're with Kevin Bieksa. Were you a guy who knew where your Canucks teams were in the standings, Kevin? Or did you not tune into that sort of thing until you were kind of into the stretch drive?
Yeah, more for the stretch drive. I wasn't a guy who looked at the standings every day. We, for a while there, we were always near the top, so it wasn't. I think I missed the playoffs twice in my career, so it wasn't something that I was ever worried about. But down the stretch, for sure, you'd start to look at the standings a little bit more to see what your seeding is and who you're planning on being matched up against. But honestly, like, there's just the season's so long, and there's so many games, and there's so much travel and everything that I kind of always just lived in the moment. I didn't really think too far ahead. And sometimes people would say, "Oh, what's your month look like next month?" And for your road trips and everything, and I'm like, I got no idea. I know my next road trip is going to Chicago, Nashville, and Dallas, and then after that, who knows what's going on. So that's the kind of the way I was.
We want to get your opinion on this Leafs team and kind of what went wrong, how they, you know, how they're still in this position. I was telling Scotty earlier in the show, I mean, what's really changed in the last 10 years? It's a better roster, but we're almost still in the same spot. What did you make of the series against Columbus now that it's over?
Well, I think the people in Toronto thought that this was going to be a bit of a slam dunk, but I thought it was a bad matchup from the beginning. So I didn't really expect them to win. I thought it was going to be close and going to game five like it did. But I don't think they were, in my opinion, they weren't favored to win. I know they were the higher seed, but not by much. It was a close series. It was your typical defense versus offense. And in game one, you saw Columbus really clog it up and frustrate the Leafs' top guys. You saw in game two, the top boys got going a little bit more, got a little confidence, a little swagger, made some plays. I thought Freddie was good in the series. I know Freddie's going to take some heat. I thought he was really good in the series. I thought game one, he was excellent when the Leafs weren't very good. And he kept him in it, and he made a half a mistake on the Atkinson goal. But a half a mistake by your goalie in a game shouldn't be a loss. So they kind of spoiled that performance in game one for him. You know, game five was just, I don't know, it was tough to watch because it just was one of those dull games. And you thought as soon as the game started, wow, this is really going to play into Columbus's favor. But, you know, it was a back and forth series. There was some little things here and there that needed to be changed. But I thought for the most part, it was a well-played series by both teams. The Leafs team, the way they're built, you know, they just couldn't sustain a Muzzin injury. Like, they're just not deep enough on defense to have Muzzin out and be successful. So I thought that really hurt them.
Kevin Bieksa is our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Kevin, when you look at that series, I look at it as a microcosm of the broader Leafs season. And you laid the season or the series out. A lot of nights you wondered what you were going to get. Coming off of bad nights, there would be a really strong night. And we saw that in game two. And we would tease ourselves into believing that the Leafs would play at a consistently higher level off of a big night. And then they would just fall flat again. And that happened in this series. What in your mind, and it may not just be one thing, but what in your mind is missing from this team? Because on paper, they look, I mean, especially up front, the higher paid guys, on paper, they look star-studded. But there is clearly at least one thing missing.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to play GM right now. I know everybody's trying to play GM in Toronto, but I thought Matthews and Marner played their hearts out. And if anybody, and I didn't watch a lot of their regular season games, like I mentioned, I barely watched, especially being out in California, but I watched every game of this playoffs, and I watched two very determined guys, and even throw Tavares in there. Like, the three of them played very, very determined hockey, and they played their hearts out. And, you know, like, everybody makes mistakes out there. They did make their mistakes, but they also played really, really well, and they carried their team. I thought that fourth line, like with Spez and Clifford and then Engvall, they played their hearts out as well. They weren't as effective in game five. I thought, like many criticism, I thought maybe they should have started that game. But again, that's the coach's decision. It wasn't a big deal. But I thought maybe you should have started them with game five and kind of showed the team that that was basically the line that kept their season alive in game four. But they were really good throughout the series. The defense, you know, was okay. Freddie was good, in my opinion. Like, there's got to have to be changes, like many changes, because it's still a pretty good team. But it's tough to sit back right now and criticize, because it was such a close series. And if they win game five, everyone's talking about how great they are again. So I'm not going to sit back here and pick apart their roster. That's for Kyle Dubas and Lawrence Gilman and everybody else to do. But I thought the stars, well, at least Matthews, Marner, and Tavares, I thought they led the way and they played their hearts out.
Yeah, you mentioned Freddie Anderson there. I thought he played well in the series. I think he's, I've told Scotty over the last year, he, even though it's not the season he wanted, he's a guy they rely on. He can handle the big stage, but he only does have that 1 year left on his deal. What do you kind of think happens with Freddie? You think he kind of comes back, or is this one of those things where you want to know what, it's not working out, he can't win us the big game, and we have to find someone else that maybe can win us, push us over the top?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he played well enough where there's no reason to not let him play out as last year. And then, you know, they decided what they want to do moving forward. But you guys have to remember, like, you guys probably know, but the fans have to understand that the way this Leaf team plays, and again, think about what I just said about how don't watch a lot of hockey at all for the Leafs. I can't believe the stress that Freddie's under at the start of every game. He has to be lights out at the start of every game because of the way they play, because they're, in my opinion, a slower starting team, because they like to open it up, and it seems like they're more interested in getting the offense going early. Freddie is making grade A after grade A save in the first 10 minutes of games, more so than I've ever seen. I played in the league as well for 13, 14, 15 years, and I can't ever remember giving up that many grade A chances at the start of a game. And every game I watch the Leafs, Freddie's unbelievable early. And if he lets a goal in early because he's not 100% sharp, they're down 1-0. That's the way every Leaf game started in the series. So he's under a lot of stress, and he's not perfect, but he played his heart out as well. And I don't care what goalie you bring in there, they're going to be under the same stress at the beginning of games. It's as hard as a goalie to come out of the gates with like five grade A's in the first 10 minutes. But that's the way the Leaf team plays. So I don't know how much you can really fault a goalie for that.
But that's something that they're going to have to correct then, Kevin, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's a coaching philosophy and a organizational philosophy, and that's for them to figure that out. What team they want to put on the ice and what style of play, right? The styles of play, it's a copycat league, right? So it's going to depend on who wins the Stanley Cup again this year. If St. Louis wins the Stanley Cup again this year, that's 2 years in a row, and that's a team that's like a meat and potatoes, clog it up, play tough. They chip pucks out and in more than any team in the league. So if they win it again, it'll be a copycat league, and other teams will adjust. When the high-flying Chicago Blackhawks won 3 cups in 5 years, everybody adjusted, and they went to this more offensive, open-spread offense. When the LA Kings won a couple cups there, everybody got to try to get bigger again. So it's a copycat league. So we'll see. The leagues will be sitting back, I'm sure, watching how the playoffs unfold. But they're looking at what teams are having success right now. Like, yeah, their team is built for a high-tempo offensive style. But are those teams going to have success? What if Tampa gets swept by Columbus in the next round? Yeah, I'm sure that's going to change their minds and their philosophies.
Kevin Bieksa is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What did you think was going to happen in Game 5, Kevin, after the way the Leafs stormed back with the goalie pulled in the final 3-4 minutes of Game 4? Did you have a feeling one way or the other? And did Columbus locking it down in Game 5 as a result surprise you?
I said in the pregame, I was a part of the comeback on Catella, which was the Ducks, when we came back, were down 3 goals with 4 minutes left against Edmonton, second round of the 2017 playoffs. We came back and we won that game in overtime. It was similar to the Leafs comeback. And when we came back, we tied the series at 2. So we went from being possibly down 3-1 in the series, stranglehold, to tied 2-2. And right away, it felt like it was an exhale. It was like, okay, thank God, we can breathe. We're not on the ropes now. And we came back the next game and we lost 7-1. So I kind of was worried about that, maybe. Like, it was such a emotional win, and it felt so good, and they deserved it. But then there was maybe going to be that little mini exhale, because, okay, we're back to 2-2 in the series. We're back to 0-0 on the scoreboard. We can finally relax a little bit. And that's kind of the way they started, just not maybe urgent enough to win that game. And that plays into Columbus's favor, because they're just a sit back, clog it up, take advantage of your mistakes kind of team, and that's exactly what they did. Who I would like to admit was beautifully coached by John Tortorella. Like him or not, he coached an amazing series with some of the moves he made, like the Korpisalo early when he pulled him and put Merzlikins in, and how he handled the whole Dubois thing, and then how he bounced back and got his team to bounce back from Game 5. And some of the line change, if you're watching it as like a person who likes the game within the game, some of the line change matchups he did and some of the things he did to get away from line change matchups, it was fun to watch.
What did you think about the Sheldon Keefe moves for Game 5, bringing Johnsson back in, taking Robertson out, loading the big line, Nylander at center? What did you make of some of his moves and how he handled it?
I didn't mind that. He's trying to make something happen. I think you give the kid Robertson a couple games there. He's your top prospect. But I think when everything's on the line, you go with your veteran group and you go with your guys that you know. And Johnsson was a guy that he was familiar with. And I didn't mind that move at all. I think, I don't know if I would have, and again, this is just opinion, but I don't know if I would have started with the big boys loaded up. I think I would have tried to get back to finding a balance and then maybe go to them if you're struggling to create offense. And what was the other move that you said?
Nylander at center. Well, you load the big boys up, then you got to put Nylander at center, yeah. Right? There's not many options down the middle. I mean, I didn't like the Nylander in the middle. It didn't look good. It gets a guy in the game if he's not in it, and he's kind of struggled throughout, you know, the playing. But I don't mind that, trying to get a guy going. But, it didn't look good.
Well, then, yeah, I didn't know when I was asking, does Nylander usually play center? And some of the people around me were like, he has at times, but no, he's a winger. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense, because he doesn't look like he wants to be. Because for me, he's the guy that's thinking offense. Well, when you're a centerman, you can't be thinking offense when you're in your zone. You're the down low guy. You're going to be the last guy to enter the offensive zone. So you have to kind of be patient, and center is just a whole new position than being a winger, mm-hmm. being an offensive winger. So that was, that's a tough change to make. But Kevin, he's trying something.
Kevin Bieksa, our guest. Just want to fire one at you before we let you go, Kev. Is there a particular team you're watching now that we get underway, first round of the best of 7, the round of 16 playoffs? Is there a team that's maybe not on the board, top of mind, that you like to go deep into these playoffs?
Not top of the board. I'm going to have to say, and it's probably not that much of an underdog, but Carolina. I think it's my son's favorite team, so I'm probably more familiar with the Carolina Hurricanes than most people. So to watch them, and it's interesting to see a team that won their first round, and then they get to play against a team that lost a few games. So The momentum's kind of on their side here, and they're playing well. They're a pretty deep team, and when Dougie Hamilton comes back, they're going to be even deeper. And they kind of got that not cockiness, but they got a swagger, and they're confident, and they've had it, right? Like with the whole storm surge thing last year and everything, they got like this little swagger that's something that you need to be successful. Like they believe in themselves, so it'll be interesting to watch those guys. I like Rod Brindamore a lot. I think he's done a great job coaching them. I think he's the kind of ex-player that players really, really like to play for, because he understands what it's like to be a player. He treats them the way that he should be treated. He's hard on them. He's accountable. They're going to be a fun team to watch.
So if Dad played for Vancouver and Anaheim, how'd your son end up a Hurricanes fan? Is it the storm surge?
No.
How'd it happen?
I don't know how. He claims, and I don't even know if this is true because I'm doing the math in my head. He claims that he watched Sebastian Aho and Teravainen at the World Juniors, and that's when he became fans of them. And then his favorite player is Aho. And I'm like, do, quick math. Like he's turning 13, and I'm like, okay, so you were watching them when you were 6 or 7. And anyways, he sticks to that story. He's got the Aho jersey, and I introduced him to Aho at the All-Star game a couple of years ago, and he just froze like it was his idol. So he's a legit Carolina fan.
There you go.
It's a good player to have as an idol, though. I mean,
absolutely.
God, he's in my top five for most entertaining players to watch. I mean, I love guys that are good and skilled, but I mean, entertainment value, he's incredible to watch.
Sure is. Got that nice goal at the end of the last series.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
And Carolina doesn't mess around either. They don't always make the playoffs, but when they do, they tend to go on deep runs. That seems to have been the story over the last 15, 16 years or so. Good of you to do this morning, Kevin. We'll talk again next week and look forward to it.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good week.
Nice. Kevin Bieksa, Sportsnet hockey analyst. The great Wendell Clark, the former captain of the Maple Leafs, now a Leafs community ambassador. He's got something to tell us about, and we'll pick his brain on the series with Columbus that was. Wendell is next. Wendell Clark coming up in just a couple of minutes here on Leadoff. Pundit Ziggy. There's so many of you in this city who just don't understand the game, and it pisses me off.
Are we going to do it with Wendell? It pisses me off
that people like you don't understand the hockey, Ziggy. Torts is the best.
Well, you got to be in... There's only so many experts in punditry, okay?
Are you one of them? When do you consider it that you've fully moved over to the dark side? I mean, that's the deal, right? Or do you just kind of dip your toe in the water and you never fully cross?
I'm pretty sure most current players don't think former players fully do the cross the river. It's a.
That's what you're hoping. That's what you're hoping.
That's what I, from just talking with current players, that's the feeling I get. They're just like, I don't know. I don't know if you fully cross the dark side, but I don't know. We all know Torts. We know what he's about. You know, sticking up for guys and. In his position, it's tough, right? I want to know what he read or saw. I want to see who was all over Keefe. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of articles or maybe some comments made about the way the lineup was drawn up for game five, whether it was Johnsson for Robertson, although Andreas Johnsson's been a part of this team. I mean, when he's healthy, I think you go with him. And then the stacking of the top line, which necessitated Nylander being the second line center. I mean, I think
like,
but a lot of the criticism was geared toward Kyle Dubas and then some of the individual players, the usual suspects. Right?
Well, I understand if people are hard on what decisions were made in game five. Yes, I get it. I didn't like the Janssen move when it was made before the game. Obviously, they lose. He doesn't play his best game. He hasn't played in a while. But yeah, you're a guy that hasn't played since February. It's a do-or-die game. You throw your top guys in. I understand the move. Why is Nylander at center? Well, he wanted to load up his top line. I get it. It's just if it doesn't work, you're going to get questioned. And if he doesn't load up the top line, everyone's sitting here today saying, well, how wouldn't he play the big boys together? Why wouldn't he put Janssen in if he's healthy and available in a game, in a do-or-die game? So it's kind of no win for him, but people are going to question it when you don't win. That's what happens. That's what happened when I played, and that will never stop. So it's tough to sit and take the criticism sometimes, but it's part of the job.
All right, he's the former Maple Leafs captain, Leafs community ambassador, and one of the all-time favorite Leafs. He's here to talk a little bit about cereal sellies tied to Frosted Flakes, and I think he'll break down what he saw in the Leafs jacket series. Here is our friend, Wendell Clark. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Well, I mean, it's not the morning after the night before, Wendell. It's the morning after the day after the night before. So I think recovery begins from the disappointment for Leafs fans. But what did you see? What did you see over the five game series? And why do you think the Leafs fell short?
Well, they hopefully having a bowl of Frosted Flakes after that series. But anyway, no, it's something. It's whether it's a 5-game series, 7-game series, it doesn't matter when. We just have to find a way to win. We've been in, this is the third or fourth year in the playoffs, losing in 6 or 7 games, and we have to find a way to win that game. And it really, we all have our favorite styles that, individuals think that wins best, and this is the style we play, and so that group has to find a way to win the game 7 or win the game 6 if that's what it takes. And it doesn't matter the style. We have to find a way to score the goal. I think everybody plays well enough because you win a few games, but you don't win the one that matters. And when we ever win the one that matters, that's when the whole team will say, oh, they'll kind of figure out, okay, that's how we do it. And then so that's, as a group, inside that dressing room, coaching staff and players, they have to figure out what it takes to win.
You yourself were a game changer, Wendell. Doug Gilmore, Matt Sundin. Is that something that was just kind of, with you your whole life, or is that something you developed as you gained experience in the NHL? Because I always talk about this with Scotty on the air here on the show, and how there's certain players that are great, and then there's certain players that will put the team on their back. And I just feel like the Leafs are still kind of looking for that. Is this something these guys can develop into, or is that just something you've had your whole life?
No, I think players have to want to be in the situation. I think that's part of it. The Dougie, nobody that 92 to 94, nobody was in the situation better than he was. He was, he led by example. But on top of that, not just leading by example, you had to perform. You had to get the, it's one thing getting 2-3 points a game in the regular season. It's doing it under the tightest checking in a playoff format when teams aren't going to allow you to go to the same areas because it's playoffs. And you have to find a way to go there. When you have the chance, you have to finish. It's not that they don't want to. It's just you have to. And that's, all players, I think, dream of putting themselves in situations of scoring the big goal or making the big plays at the right time. And a lot of it isn't about the goals. It's about what you're doing in other parts of the game. There's so many different players that do things. Like probably the most valuable player on the ice between both teams was Foligno. And yet he wasn't big on all the points. But if you looked at energy for the team and all the big situations, he was in on everything, whether it be skating guys down, making a play, finishing checks. He was in on everything. And that's a type of energy that's leading by example. And it's not anything to do with points. It's just the other team is building on how he is playing. He's one of their focal points on forward. You wouldn't say he was their best forward, but when I'm looking at the game saying what controlled that game, it would have been a lot of how he played.
Wendell Clark is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You played in this fishbowl on a few occasions in your career, Wendell, and the first time was the true heyday, as you say, 92 to 94, couple of seasons that Leafs fans my age and older certainly remember and remember very fondly. What is, in your mind, having dealt with it, what is fair and what is unfair about criticism? What is acceptable to you as a former player and when you played, the type of criticism you'd receive?
Whenever you play in Canada, it's the center of everything. And then if you're going to play in Toronto, out of all the cities in Canada, it's going to be debated. And if you don't win, they're going to pick your team apart. That's just really the game of sports. And it's going to be at the highest level where there's the most media that talk about it. And they're going to come up with more and more ideas because there's more and more shows and more things to talk about. But that's a lot of what is exciting to play in this city, because when things are going good, there's no better place to be playing than in this city, because then all those things are positive that are coming out. So it's a double-edged sword. But really, what I say, what is acceptable, not acceptable, every player always tries hard. You're at the highest level of the game. Now, you're watching TV, you may say, I don't think he's trying that hard. But really, they are. They might be out of sync, or they might not be playing as a team. But really, I'll give always the players the credit that they're working hard. So I always say, don't tell me I didn't work hard. Tell me I was no good, because that's an opinion, and that's justifiable. So that didn't bother me as much when people criticize whether you're a good player or a bad player. It just bothered you when people take shots that, well, you didn't try. And I don't know anybody that gets to the highest level of their job and doesn't try. So that's the only point that I would say when people say they don't try or they don't care, because that part's just not true. Saying you're not good enough, that's, you can say that because you didn't win.
Mm-hmm. I was never part of any team. I never stayed anywhere long enough. I moved 40 times. But you were involved in obviously big pieces of puzzles and captains and, played for multiple teams. Do the players, do the nucleus of guys know when a team is going to make a change now? Because I know everyone's talking about, all right, blow the team up, let's start again, or get rid of some of the big four. Do the guys know in the room, or is this something where it kind of surprises the core of a group when management makes a change?
I don't think you always know. Heck, I had my best season ever. We finished the semifinals. I got traded at the draft. And didn't know anything about it in 94. So, when you don't win, and that's 2 years to the semifinals, we hadn't got to the point where we needed. So Cliff Fletcher makes something that thinks, and heck, you end up getting a Hall of Famer, Matt Sundin. So it's a pretty good deal all around, but you're at the time, you would not think that was going to happen to that team that had done so well to the semifinals. Right. So you never know. And when you don't win, we're playing in a sport where it's about winning. It's not about you had a nice game and you don't get the fair play badge. We want to see wins. And that's the bottom line, wins. We have to see the cereal celly, as we say, with Frosted Flakes here. We have to see people cheering and celebrating.
Well, and that's why you're here, Wendell, to break down the Leafs and also to tell us about the cereal celly from Frosted Flakes. Give us the rundown as we celebrate the return of hockey after, and it's long overdue, like all the sports, after four and a half months living through the COVID pandemic.
Well, definitely. And Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, the official partner with the NHL, and the cereal celly. We're just trying to get everybody active. It's only the NHL guys that can be playing games right now. But we as fans, and especially the kids and people watching all these games, especially as played in the two hubs, you're watching 3 to 5 games, 3 to 4 games a day right now. So you need the energy, you need the fun, and nothing better than Frosted Flakes to keep the energy up. And we want to see the cereal sellies. We want the people celebrating their team winning or their buddy scoring, their favorite player scoring a goal. So the cereal selly is what we want to see.
Yeah, I've got cereal right now, and I'm kind of wishing I had Frosted Flakes. So my trip to the next trip to the grocery store, I'm getting my Frosted
Trying to think
Flakes.
Who would have the best cereal celly. Would Mike Foligno would definitely be up there with a cereal celly.
Mike Foligno probably had the best cereal celly, and I don't know how he'd keep him in the bowl with every time he started jumping in the air. Like we all knew when Mike was doing the celly that, because normally when somebody scores a goal, everybody's going over to the guy that's scoring the goal. Or with Mike, we're like, everybody stay away. He's going to do this jump, and his stick's going to be flying all over the place. The skates are going to be in the air. So he had probably the best celly.
Yeah, and you don't want to get headbutted by that helmet.
No, it's true. He had the best. He was wearing the bowl. He was all set for the Frosted Flakes with that helmet he wore.
Yeah, flip it upside down and little Frosted Flakes and some milk. It's always great to hear your voice, Wendell. We appreciate your insight. And, you know, Leafs fans, I mean, we look forward to next year and hope for a deeper playoff run and eventually the hoisting of that Stanley Cup. We'll catch up again very soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. All the best.
Wendell Thanks. Clark, three-time Maple Leaf, former captain, and the first overall pick in 1985. The cereal celly. Did you ever have a good celebration? You ever have a celly? Even back to Kingston.
No, brutal cellies. I never had celly. I was told early in my career in junior, you don't pretend it's the only time you're doing it.
You've been there before.
Act like you've been there like before. Exactly.
Stick up though. Stick up's acceptable.
Yeah, hands in the air, one hand in the air. On the road, probably a nothing, maybe a little fist pump, like give it a little. I don't know. I don't like going by the bench.
Well, everybody does that now.
But that never happened earlier in my career.
I remember.
That was something new. Remember, the guys used to just go back to center, you change. I don't like it. As a coach, coaching UFT, I don't like it either. I would love for, if you know, not getting rid of the by the bench. It's just, I don't like it. But
Hugh and I were talking before the show, Zig. We were doing some prep work. We were talking about the age where you become the person you swore you never would be, where you start griping about the new school things. You've become that guy.
Yeah.
The high fives along the bench. They bother you.
I never liked them when I played, and I really don't like them now. So, hey, I don't like by the bench, but I love a good celly. Like, remember the Solani glove in the air, firing it with his stick.
That was one of the 76 in his rookie year, right? With Winnipeg.
Yeah. I saw him play.
How about Tiger Williams? There was nothing better than Tiger Williams. Just ride the stick all the way back to center ice.
Oh, yeah. It's great. The Sundin, Gilmore's, I don't remember them having any crazy cellies. I remember the Dougie two hands up whenever they'd score. I remember that from my childhood. Wendell used to have the one arm in the air.
Yeah.
I can remember that sticks out from
but
my
Foligno,
childhood.
Foligno obviously stands out because he used to, and Wendell described it, he used to jump up and down, but Mike Foligno scored the overtime winner in game 5 at Detroit in the 93 playoffs. And that was insane because that gave them the chance to come home and win the series, which obviously they didn't do. They went back to Detroit and then Borshevsky tips Bob Rouse's shot in overtime.
How about Lanny McDonald?
Yes. And he had a bucket too.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. All the Peter Klima helmets, the Lanny McDonald, the Mike Foligno helmets.
You love the helmets, eh?
They're all gone now. It's just
you love the helmets.
Well, I mean, some of those, the Peter Klima.
The Peter Klima
bucket was grotesque.
Remember he used to get just chirped on like Don Cherry's Rock'em Sock'em? Don Cherry used to go, he's like, look at the bucket on that guy. Like he used to just give it to him. I'm not sure if he ever chirped him on, used to chirp him on Hockey Night in Canada, but
yeah.
I can remember on one of those like Rock'em Sock'ems or highlight videos as a kid on the VHS, and I remember Klima used to just get beaked.
Just run. And I mean, Wayne Gretzky used to wear the paper Jofa helmet.
I have to get one of those for when I coach. So I'm still coaching kids from time to time, do private sessions. I got to get a more comfortable helmet because the one I used to wear is just not comfortable.
Not
Nothing's
comfortable.
Comf- No, it just, it wasn't comfortable. My skates aren't comfortable, but yeah, that bucket was awesome.
It was just a piece of paper. Trofa. It was a piece of plastic with no padding.
That wasn't going to do anything. You get hit in the head with that thing, you might as well be wearing a paper mache lid. So,
all right. Well, we'll do a text line tomorrow. Best buckets of all time. Remind me, because I have terrible short-term memory.
I just wrote down. Done.
Blue Jays play their Buffalo home opener tonight. They'll debut the Powder Blues, the long-awaited Powder Blues that we first saw back at Winterfest at Rogers Center in January. Ben Nicholson-Smith coming up on Good Show. We'll get you set for Good Show. And Hugh pops back into studio next. Blue Jays and Miami Marlins in Buffalo tonight, a game you can listen to on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Raptors back in action against the 76ers tomorrow night. Ben Simmons down for the year. Huge loss for Philly ahead of the playoffs. Hugh Burrell jumps into a studio with me. Ziggy is here.
Heard you boys talking about the lids last segment. How about those old, remember those old Winwell helmets with the, it looked like unicorn thing out the back and out on the side, and guys would get in fights in those, and they'd be pounding their fists off those Winwell helmets. Oof. Ouchie. I think Mario wore one early in his career.
Okay.
Ouch.
But yeah, I remember the Winwells.
Yeah, but those Jofa ones were. And of course,
got a nomination on to 590/590 Butch Goring.
Butch Goring.
That's a little before my time.
Yeah.
But Butch Goring had a classic bucket.
Yeah, you're right. You might as well just wear like a handkerchief over your head or something. Because for all the protection, those things off.
Yeah. Well, Ziggy's a pundit now. Did you know that? I mean, he's one of these people in this market who doesn't know anything about, he doesn't know anything about the sport.
Nothing.
He doesn't know anything about the sport.
Nothing.
And quite frankly, I'm sick of it.
Yeah, talking about Tortorella. Tortorella going off on the media for not knowing anything about how the game is played. And earlier I hinted that always makes me laugh, because some of the most respected broadcasters or pundits, if you will, never played the game. I'm pretty sure that Howard Cosell, guys like Howard Cosell and Bert Sugar, never were professional boxers. They knew a lot about the boxing game.
Sure.
Yeah. Jim Lampley, same thing.
Kind of brushed up on it from time to time.
So to say that because you never played the game, you don't understand the game is disingenuous. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Hugh Burrell.
Heating up, baby.
Giving it to Torts.
Dropping some pepperoni on the pizza at the end of the show. I like it. Just winding up that Jack in the Box.
Don't get me started.
Boom.
I'm going off.
We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Ben Nicholson-Smith among the guests on Good Show. The Blue Jays play their Buffalo opener. We'll break it all down at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Enjoy your Tuesday.